Emmanuel Bobby, welcome. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you, Gerhard.
You just, when we just came in, you reminded me we met in 2015 in South Africa. That was at the Research Council, right?
Yes, I was working on the research, Agricultural Research Council.
What were you doing there?
I was a specialist researcher in agricultural mechanization, and I've established a research project on mechanized cassava production in South Africa, especially in the Eastern Corridor from Limpopo through Mpumalanga to the eastern part of KwaZulu-Natal, especially Richards Bay and Pangeni area there. So I did a demonstration, a very successful demonstration in July 2015. And this, you carried it in the Farmers Weekly. And that is how our relationship started.
Yes. Now it's basically 10 years later. But you moved on since then. You are back in Ghana, as far as I understand.
Yes, I came back in Ghana because I was there as a researcher, but I took my sabbatical leave, and after that project, then I returned to my classroom in Ghana. Okay. So I spent 2 years there.
And so what role are you now fulfilling in Ghana?
In Ghana, I'm back in the classroom as a university teacher and a researcher in agricultural mechanization, training students, and they're trying to, you know, create something like a succession plan so that some students can take over from me and do better what I'm doing now.
And have you been able to identify a few students that will be your successors?
Yes. In fact, presently, I'm actually supervising, I'm the lead supervisor of our 12 PhD students who are all working on various topics in agricultural mechanization and engineering. And I hope these are actually the crop of young scientists who will take over from me, I mean, in a few years' time.
And just to be sure, you are from Ghana originally?
Yes, I'm a Ghanaian. I'm a born and bred Ghanaian.
And where are you based now, and where were you born?
I'm based in Ghana, and I was born in Ghana, but my birthplace is in the eastern part of the country, in the Volta region.
Okay.
And it is about 100 kilometers. My hometown is actually about 100 kilometers east of the capital, Accra. But where I'm working and where my university is about 250 kilometers northeast of the capital.
In what town?
It's called Kumasi. And I'm in the University of Kwame Nkrumah, University of Science and Technology.
Okay. We're talking about cassava today, which I was introduced to cassava when I was living in Paraguay in South America as a kid. And there, of course, it's known as manioc. And there it's also known as yuca or maniote esculante or Brazilian arrowroot. And I remember distinctly eating it for the first time, and it was similar to potato. It was a bit more fibrous, but I enjoyed the taste more. It was almost like there was more taste in it. Like, potatoes have become quite neutral, some of them, most of them. And there we ate it, you know, you boiled it, and or they made it like in potato fries, like, you know, burger and fries, that kind of thing done in oil. And so I always thought, you know, this is a good, you know, you eat it, but you kind of just go back to South Africa and you just eat rice and potatoes. And, you know, but not a lot of people not a lot of white people are exposed to it, if one wants to put it that way. And I drew some data. I see in 2021, global cassava production was about 308 million tons, 203 million tons produced in Africa. Asia at about 84 million tons. I don't know if so. I think there's a lot of cassava production that's done by smallholders or subsistence farmers that probably does fly under the radar. And compare that 308 million tons compared to maize or corn, which was produced at something like 1.15 billion tons. And cassava, I just pulled this for people who don't know it. It's a root vegetable, and it's got plenty of carbohydrates, and there's vitamin C, thiamine, riboflavin, niacin, And you can cook the leaves, and it contains up to 25% protein, which is a lot. But of course, you know more about it. I assume you grew up eating cassava.
Yes, Gerhard, thanks so much for that statistics you have released. If I as we are talking now in this year, 2024, or at the close of 2023, I think the global production is almost exceeding 300 million metric tons.
Yes.
And Africa produces over 60% of that. And then the rest are produced by Southeast Asia and then Latin America.
Yes.
But the sad aspect is that when it comes to the export or the value-added value, Africa is actually the least continent that is, profiting or transforming cassava for the international market.
Yeah.
And the reasons are many, but the few reasons that actually is impeding Africa's industrialization of cassava. First of all, it is produced by the smallholder farmers who are the bulk of producers on the continent, and these people have small holdings.
Yeah.
And because they are small holdings, they do not actually inject appropriate mechanization into the production. And the present production they do is full of drudgery. And especially when you need cassava throughout the year, it is becoming a problem. Unlike potato, which is potato, rice, and maize. In fact, rice and maize are cereals. And then in fact, there has been a lot of innovation as far as mechanization is concerned. And even potato is also having a lot of mechanization as far as it's concerned. But cassava appears to be an orphan crop simply because it is not a major foodstuff for the white, the Europeans.
Mm.
And just like you have said, cassava, it tastes better than potato. But why potato has been elevated to such a high level, and then it is even seen in international hotels and then the rest as against cassava, I mean, it means that initially there was not much attention paid to it by developers and then even African government after independence. But when you look at a country like Brazil, cassava has actually attained a very high status. If you go to any five-star hotel, you see a lot of cassava products. I mean, from the chips all the way into the suite after meals.
Yes.
So that is where we are. But if you look at the profile, if you look at the product that can come from cassava, no other root and tuber crops comes near. In fact, cassava is a root crop simply because it develops first as a root before filling. But the products that can be calibrated from cassava are many, in fact, up to about 200 different products. And there are some that can have shelf life over 1 year.
Mm.
And the benefits of cassava now is so enormous that if Africa gives it a little bit of attention, just like what it has done to the cereal crops, in fact, it is likely cassava can take a lot of African countries out of the present economic predicament they find themselves. Because one, cassava is a very hardy, heat-tolerant, and drought-resistant crop.
Mm.
In fact, cassava needs very little input in terms of agrochemicals and care to yield. And now that our colleagues who are in the natural sciences are breeding elite varieties that are quadrupling the yield, if now with the support of agricultural engineers and then we inject some appropriate mechanization to cassava production, and all smallholders are actually lifted from using the traditional handheld tools, and we use appropriate technology, especially the harvesting, which is the most painful activity during the growth period. It is likely cassava, we can quadruple the yield of cassava, and then to take care of the food security component that the present low yield is taking care of, and then the huge surplus can actually be offloaded to the industrial arena for processing into so many value-added crops, just like bioethanol that we can use for so many things, artificial rice, I mean, the flour, the starch can be used in several industries like the pharmaceutical industry as a binder, in the plywood industry, in the paper industry, in the textile industry, in the glue, as a glue. In fact, we can even use a cassava starch as a biodegradable plastic and so many things. So, and even now, I mean, research is going on to say that cassava stem or cassava root, if they are cooked and administered properly, it can have some health benefits. Like it is being seen as having some sort of cancer, suppressing characters and the rest. So Cassava has been neglected for a very, very long time, during the colonial era up to now. And I think it is a crop that, if given the necessary attention, it is likely can take a lot of African countries out of the woods. And that is why some of us have developed passion for it. But the problem is that because it has been neglected for so long, resources to support its uptake and then its, you know, removing all those burdens and painful, stressful pains in its production are still not getting the required attention. So this opportunity that you are giving now is a God-sent one, and I think it will give us the opportunity to give a lot of oxygen and publicity to some of the bottlenecks that are impeding the cassava production. And if this is removed, it is likely it can also compete favorably with the carbon four crops that are popular with the donor community and then the development partners.
So where does the problem start? Is it the harvesting? Is that the key? Because I mean, it takes 5 to 10 minutes to harvest a cassava plant by hand, because you're doing it with the, I actually don't know what the tool is called. It's like a shovel.
The hoe.
So you're doing it
in the machete.
And you're doing it in very, very dry ground. So you're basically, you know, it's almost like cracking through cement and then and going into it. But you invented a harvester that brought it down to how fast for one plant?
About a second or less.
Yes.
Yes. So yeah, that is true, because when you look, when you profile the whole activity in the calendar of cassava production, harvesting appears to be the most time demanding and stressful task.
Yes.
I mean, for land preparation now, they moved away from using the hand hoe and the cutlass. People are using tractors to plow. But even that one, it's only plowing they do. They don't break the bigger cross into smaller cross during harrowing or disking. Yeah. And now that if we are talking about climate action, ridging is actually being put forward as a very major land form for cassava production, because if you plant on ridges, it helps the roots to develop very fast, and then it helps in the bulking and then in the development of the fleshy part.
Yeah.
Now, if you ridge and then there is a very heavy rainfall in the field, It is possible for the furrows to immediately evacuate the excess moisture, so that you prevent mature roots from getting rotten. And then in the event of in the dry season with little precipitation, then that little precipitation can actually be stored in the depressions in the furrows to get to the root. So ridging is actually a very important method now to be adopted by all cassava farmers, both small and then medium and then large, so that if that is done, it will also make the farmers to be free from all the stressful activities from land preparation through to harvesting. The only activity that farmers may be compelled to undertake may be planting, and that one doesn't take too much time. But if they do that, plowing, harrowing, ridging, even weeding can be mechanized now with the ridger we are developing. And then finally, the harvesting. So these five activities can be offloaded to tractor owners. And once they do that, it will become a win-win. It will make the tractor owners to do activities that will give them economic break-even heritage in the year, so that they can get some revenue from the ownership of the tractors. And then also it will relieve the farmers from, engaging themselves through the strenuous way in doing those unproductive manual waste on the field.
Yeah.
So that will also enable the newly released elite varieties that our colleagues, the scientists, have released to be planted in the modern way, so that the yields will be high, and then it will cater for the food security component the farmers have been experiencing with their primitive cultivation methods, and have the surplus that can be taken over by the off-takers for processing and then for export. So the whole tax activity in the calendar of cassava production can be mechanized, and then it will just come to the level of the cereal crops that a lot of mechanization has been injected into them, so that their production is so easy, and then the yields are also very high. And that is what we should aim at now in this fourth industrial revolution.
So maybe run me through the cassava calendar? Like, when is it planted? Yeah. And just how is it planted also? Because I understand it's basically just a piece of the branch that you stick in the ground. Just maybe run me through that calendar, how it's planted at the moment.
Great. The cassava, it can be also planted through what we call conservation agriculture, but that is a different issue together. But now we are encouraging conventional agriculture in the sense that you have to plow, harrow, and ridge. Now, when you create this landform, then you cut the stem to about 25 centimeters or just less than about 12 inches or less. And then you actually, with the nodes pointing upright, then you insert them into the soil at an acute angle. I mean, in one direction, so that there will be, you bury half of the nodes in the soil and then another half above ground. Yes. And then it will sprout, the nodes that are above ground will sprout, and then the roots will also develop from those that are the portion that is beneath below ground. And the roots develop first as roots, and like I've said, that's why we call it a root crop. And then after 3 to 4 months, then it starts filling. This filling process is called bulking. Yes. And then after that, then it will be ready. That means you have the flesh that is ready to serve as food. And that is when it becomes ready. In fact, there are some local varieties or land races that can mature within 6 to 8 months. So those are the planting, after planting, and then in fact, cassava, the good thing about cassava is that because it is heat tolerant, when you are able to plant with a little bit of moisture in the soil and it's able to sprout, no matter how severe the drought, it will survive till the next rainy season. And then after that, there may be some weeds, but there are some varieties that actually form canopy. So when they form canopy like this, within the rows, the canopy will suppress these weeds. But between the rows, these are the ones that need to be taken care of so that they do not compete with the crops for nutrients. And here too, we are developing a certain version of the disc ridger, which you can use to clean the furrows or between the rows so that when they mature after 4 to 5 months, the canopy will form in such a way that the farm will be clean. And then both canopies from adjacent ridges will close, and then the farm will be free from weeds. But there are some varieties that actually are very good at suppressing weeds naturally. Yes.
Then you don't have to obviously use chemical spray if you're using the mechanical version on the weeds.
Exactly. We don't need to use a chemical. Because in fact, for me personally, this is because some of the chemicals we use are actually having some negative impact. They don't decompose early. They have a very, long shell, half-life in the soil. And then also some money to get into the edible part of the crops. And this may have actually negative impact on the health of human beings or animal that eat this crop. So if you use mechanical, it is able to disturb the root system of the weeds, and then it makes the farm clean. And when they decompose, they serve as organic manure also. So I think basically the future is that we actually cut down on the use of agrochemicals, especially the weedicide in the cassava production. Well, so far, I have using any even chemical fertilizer. I use only naturally occurring organic manure like poultry manure or any other organic manure, and the yields are very good. Cassava doesn't need too much fertilizer to get the desired yield.
What yields do you expect mostly? Like, obviously there's different varieties, but how many tons per hectare? How does that work? I have no idea.
Yeah, the traditional land races that the farmers have been using, the crude or the old traditional method where they plant haphazardly, sometimes they get about 8 tons per hectare.
Yeah, yeah.
Now our colleagues, the natural scientists, have developed varieties, elite varieties that are actually very rich in starch. And that one we can get the lowest from 30 tons per hectare to 70 tons or 80 tons per hectare.
That's massive.
Because I've planted different, about 22 newly released varieties from our crop research institute. And I was able to realize 80 tons per hectare with one particular variety. But this one actually calls for weeding, because this one, the branches are said that they are not able to form canopy. And sunlight is able to penetrate, to the ground. And then also help the weeds to grow. So, but those that are able to suppress canopy, the average yield is between 30 to 45 tons per hectare. Very, very massive.
So in general, in let's say Ghana, for instance, is it mostly grown by smallholders, or are there some big commercial farmers that grow it to be made into something else? To be how does that landscape look? Is it mostly smallholders, or yeah?
I mean, historically, cassava is grown by smallholders in the country. Yeah. But it was just about, some 12 to 15 years back that one of our President Kufo, introduced what you call Presidential Special Initiative on cassava. Mm. That is the first time people heard about cassava as an industrial crop. And that was when some few medium to large scale farmers entered the industry. But the bulk, over 90%, 98% of producers in the country are smallholder farmers. Unfortunately, they cultivate it using the old traditional method, which is not very productive. That is, they plant haphazard.
Yeah.
They do not plant in rows. Yeah. And then that is where we have to work on. That is but all the newly emerging medium to large scale farmers actually plant in the modern way that we are recommending. They plant in rows, and then preferably on ridges.
And then, that makes it easy for your harvester to come in and...
That makes it very, very easy, especially when the ground is hard.
I was surprised to see you said there was an order for your harvester to New Zealand. I assume that means it's going to be exported to Fiji or Samoa or a place like that. Do you know?
Yes. It is. I think the request came from Fiji Islands, and then also from somebody from New Zealand. I may share the email with you later on. Mm, and but they want to use it for a certain type of, it is not the cassava we have in West Africa per se, but yeah. It is like something like cocoa yam.
Okay, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yam. Yes.
Cocoa, not the yam is about, how do I call it? Colocosia, it is, it's a little name, it's like Colocosia something. And it is having some broad leaves. And those are the ones they talk. Conversation with that guy, I will look for the email and share it with you so that as you are down there, you can make some additional contact and we see.
Yes, for sure.
There was that request, yes. Because I posted some of this on YouTube, and then I even have a website, and then some people made that contact.
It's your harvester is now in full production, right? If someone puts an order, you can fulfill it.
Even I've got quite a number in the warehouse.
Yeah.
So I've actually taken some loan and then produced some units down in the warehouse. So if you ask immediately and then you send, as you honor your pro forma invoice, then, the shipping can follow in within some few days.
So you mentioned something interesting about the tractor owners. And the concept of the tractor owner is almost like a freelance tractor operator. I know what the word is and I forgot it for a contractor. So is your vision that the smallholder plants it and then they hire the tractor owner with a harvester to come and harvest it for them? Is this the vision, and then use some of that to sell to be commercially English is still my process. English is still my second language, and sometimes my brain just stops functioning in English. Process is the word I was looking for.
In fact, as an agricultural engineer, I've been lamenting all along. In our part of the world where smallholder farmers dominate, ownership of agricultural machinery is not profitable.
Yes.
Because the volume of work they do in a year is so low that they are not able to recover the cost of the investment in this machinery compared to their counterparts that go in for personnel vehicle or personnel like a taxi or Uber or anything. In fact, if you use the amount of money to buy a tractor and use it to buy a fleet of Uber or taxi vehicle, within a year or two, you double the fleet.
Yes.
But the person who owns the tractor may end up actually having a scrap. Why does it happen? One, because of the predominant nature of the smallholder farmers in our part of the world, the access between the homestead where the tractor owner is and the farms are not clearly defined. In fact, you may have some farms close to the homestead of the tractor owner and some far away. Between these two or three farms, there are no direct links. So the farmer must, the tractor owner must always come back home before going to the other farm. And the cost involved in, coming, traveling to these fields are borne by the tractor owner.
Mm.
And this is, meanwhile, because if, let's say, that we are in the same homestead and then the tractor owner is maybe a kilometer away from your farm, and my farm is about 2 kilometers, the charge for the year is constant per acre.
Mm.
But the fuel the farmer, the tractor owner burns from his home to your farm is lower than the one he burns from his home to my farm. Now, this is something the tractor owner, I mean, actually takes on himself. He doesn't transfer it to me, who he has rendered the service. And this is one major, contributing factor that makes tractor ownership not profitable.
Yes.
So now, the model I'm trying to propose, or my vision is that we go to a community where we have these cassava growers. We have about, say, 5 or 10 or even any number. And then they register for the services of this tractor owner. What that tractor owner does is that during the land preparation season, he goes in and plows for all these people, harrows, and then ridges for these people. He does these three operations. And then the farmers go and plant on their own. Then he goes in later on after 3 months or 4 months to do the weeding. Then at 8 months or 10 months when it is ripe, it is matured, he goes in to do the harvesting. So the tractor owner does 5 operations: plowing, harrowing, ridging, weeding, and harvesting. These 5 operations, if he has about 10 or 50 farmers in his catchment area, he's going to double that, he's going to work 5 times the area. And this will be approaching the break-even hectareage for economic ownership of a tractor. And that will actually relieve the farmers also to be involved in their slow, unproductive, inefficient, manual work on the field.
Mm.
So the tractor owner will take over the mechanized operations. And then the only time the farmer goes in is maybe to do the manual planting, which is not so difficult. We have manual planters, all right, but the stress involved in manual planting is not as difficult as the other activities. And when this happens all over sub-Saharan Africa, I'm telling you, that means there will be so much cassava produced, which can be processed into all those numerous products we are talking about. And some have shelf life over a year. And that can even bring in, bioethanol, which is a renewable energy.
Yeah.
So the sky is the limit for cassava, what cassava can do, the cassava product. And especially with this bioplastic, which is biodegradable, so that we don't have these plastics that are polluting our waterways, our oceans, and then all over the place. So if we focus on cassava, if it has a renewable energy source, it will fit very well into the frontier technologies of this fourth industrial revolution that we are entering now.
So why do you think this model that you're proposing is not widely accepted? Is it just too big a mind shift?
No, you see, I've explained to you, cassava is like an orphan crop.
Yes.
I know a lot of people do not give it that attention.
Mm.
And when you start like this, you are a minority. And sometimes it takes a lot of time before. Maybe this message may actually be accepted, maybe after some of us are gone.
Mm.
But we need to preach it, because the prospects are enormous. I have been working in this as a researcher for the past 30 years, and I know the benefits.
Yes.
And when you see my device working, you will be amazed, especially when the ground is hard. So if all cassava farmers can shift from the primitive haphazard planting to planting in rows, and then the tractor owners have this task to do, it will actually even help tractor manufacturers in the north or the west of Europe and the north to sell more of the agricultural machinery.
Yes.
It is something, and then now it can even prepare them for these e-vehicles we are talking about, so that this thing will find use, common use, and on the field. And with artificial intelligence and machine learning that is coming out, Internet of Things is so important now, so that we can incorporate it into these strategies, so that it will, the telemetry, the owners can even track their use on the field, and then they can know exactly what amount of work they have done. So it is one candidate, cassava production, it's one candidate that actually will embrace all these new frontier technologies that we are talking about in this fourth industrial revolution. The only thing is that policymakers, donor communities, and development partners have not actually become aware of these huge benefits. And either they are aware or they are deliberately avoiding it, or the need of that. So, but I think when the awareness is actually drawn on them all, and then even a quarter of the population embrace this new technology and methodology of producing cassava, I'm telling you, in our lifetime, I mean, most African countries will not go begging with, begging for this aid there and no, because cassava, the benefits are huge.
You mentioned one of your previous presidents put some time into cassava. Do you have the ears of people in government, or don't they share your vision? Like, how does that look?
I myself, I'm not only just an academic, I'm also interested in politics, but I'm a politician of conviction, not a politician of convenience.
Yes.
I can interact with all these people. In fact, I can get in touch with them. I mean, and most of the present, and anytime they make the presentation or they see the device, they are so excited. In fact, even the commissioning of the first generation of the commercial version I produced, they were commissioned by the government minister. So they know in their all circles. But why it is not embraced like that, I cannot explain.
Yeah.
Maybe it is a typical African mentality to patronize made in African goods.
Yes.
I mean, I think that is the issue, because they know. And then, you know, one good thing is that this is coming from the university, academia. And of late, we are overproducing graduates. And if the professors are coming out of innovation that is demand-driven, and this is supported, actually to motivate our students and even their parents to go in this direction. And that is one way that can actually absorb the huge army of unemployed graduates who now risk their lives to travel in the Sahara heat. And then those that survive the heat drown in the Mediterranean, going to the north. But the solution is so low. This is, a low-hanging fruit.
Yes.
But why the politicians are not getting, this thing, I cannot tell.
I was thinking, I don't want to sound like a conspiracy theorist, but, you know, a lot of the, let's say, potato production is based on the fact that you buy a seed potato, you buy a chemical pack from a company, a massive chemical pack, and next season you buy the seed potato again. So there's a loop where with cassava, where you're trying not to use chemicals, immediately some of those companies aren't interested because they want to sell chemicals to you.
Exactly.
And they want to sell seed to you, or they want to sell, you know, whatever, the tuber or the... So they're not interested in you because they can't get money from you. I don't know if that's a valid observation.
It may be, but in fact, I'm not even targeting the wealthy Western businessman or that. But because, I told you already, cassava is not a white man's food.
Since
the time of colonization and then the rest, they never even promoted it. Meanwhile, cassava has got more carbohydrate than potato and then the rest.
Yes.
And once they did not promote it, they may have their own reason.
Yeah.
But after independence, our governments have no reason to abandon this, because when you come to a lot of African countries, in fact, one of the low reasons why we do not enter the export market is that our productivity is low, but we consume most of them. In fact, we eat most of the cassava.
Yeah.
And then once we have that domestic demand for cassava, it is actually a huge food security benefit to our countries.
Yes.
So what we need is that presently, it is only over-aged people who are involved in the production. And these people are not going to sustain the production that will feed the growing population. And because of that, there's a need to have a paradigm shift to replace these old people with the young ones who can use modern technology to make farming attractive and then take it as a full-time business.
Yes.
And then why our government are not getting this? It is something that beats my imagination, because this is something, look, I always be making a comparison with cocoa or even coffee. You know, we grow cocoa, some of these export crops, on the most fertile part of our lands in sub-Saharan Africa.
Yeah.
But it doesn't form even 1% of our diet on the continent.
Mm.
And when we export them, even it doesn't form a meal in the importing countries. I mean, this cocoa is just chocolate. I mean, after eating their food and then the rest, kids go to the supermarket and take this as candies.
Mm.
How can a whole sovereign country condemn its most fertile land to grow, a sweet or candy? Meanwhile, the crop that we eat, the crop that produces food for us on a daily basis, we relegate them to marginal lands. Is there not something wrong with this type of people? So, yeah. I don't want to blame those white people so much. The white people, cassava actually is not a crop that is chemical dependent. And
yes.
Also, the way it is not planted from seeds, but planted by is vegetatively propagated. If you want to use GMO for the plant, the stem, and then the rest, it is not something that will fly immediately.
Yeah.
So the way we need high-yielding varieties. It is not possible for the big boys to actually monopolize the production of cassava seeds and then the rest. And because of its nature of being heat tolerant, even it doesn't require too much irrigated water or those things. And there are some varieties that are even pest and disease resistant, like this cassava mosaic and then those others. So, initially, anytime they are talking about it from the developer partner's point of view, they are always interested in the diseases and then the rest. But I've been planting cassava for the past 20 years on the same field with no chemical fertilizer. Only occasionally I use poultry manure. And the yields are always very high.
Hmm.
So it is the target is not the European rich millionaire,
no.
But the target is for our policymakers and politicians on the continent, where this crop is a major crop, to
yes.
see how we can get some moderate or appropriate mechanization to make its cultivation attractive to the youth, because the old people are getting old and their output is decreasing. Now
yes.
we need to recruit new entrants, and then these new entrants are not prepared in this age of smartphones to go and be using the hoe and the cutlass. And
yes.
the only entry point for them is actually to use a mechanization that is, incentive laden.
It's interesting that you say the new kids aren't, prepared to use the hose, because I was at a dairy farmer yesterday who's got a super advanced system. It's robots milking, right? And he said the new entrance into dairy farming don't want to be shit on, because when you're putting cups on a cow, she's shitting on you. But the new the younger generation don't want to be shit on, so they want to farm still, but they don't want that hard labor. It's a different continent and it's the same picture. Interestingly enough, if I go to a supermarket here called Countdown, there is I call it a potato chip so people know what it is, but there's a cassava chip that you buy. And my wife and I always buy the cassava chip, but when we give it to guests here, they have no clue what cassava
That's
is.
Right.
And you have to tell them a little story and they look at it suspiciously. Can you paint a picture for me about is cassava planted mostly for own consumption and then some sold to the city dwellers, in Ghana specifically? Do smallholders plant it for themselves and sell some at the market that goes to the cities, or how does that look? And how much is processed into a powder form or something that's available to buy in Ghana?
Okay, thank you, Gerhard. Ghana, luckily, over half of the population actually takes some cassava meal one way or the other on a daily basis, or some more days in the week. So, in fact, most people in Ghana have rural roots, one way or the other. So the food we eat, the cassava products, we have so many products from them, from the cassava. Even when we were in secondary schools, when we were students, there were cassava products we're eating, like gari, like this. Gari is actually a processed form of cassava, which can last for a very long time. So it is part of the student's diet from infancy. Then in adult, most homes in Ghana, the cassava products we have, like banku, fufu, and then the rest, they have some cassava products. And these are main meals people take on a daily basis in Ghanaian homes, whether in the urban area or in the rural areas. So the production in the rural areas actually are used to feed the people in the rural areas as well as feed those in the urban areas. So it is not that, but the only thing is why it is not processed that much is what I'm been lamenting all along, that it is an orphan crop. Our government have been getting a lot of donor support to support rice, maize research, but there has not been that equal demand for support or that equal allocation of resources for cassava research. And that is why even to get a critical mass of researchers in cassava, it is low. And then to get other scientists and the rest is also low. In fact, even the agricultural engineers that must make farming, I mean, less stressful, they are also few because the way they have to do, the smallholder farmer will not employ an agricultural engineer because he doesn't need the services of an agricultural engineer. And also the same thing for an agriculturist because his output is very low. But if government puts in or support this policy of empowering the cattle owners to do a lot of this to free the farmers, this will be of interest to young agriculturists and agricultural engineers to be own tractors and be rendering these mechanized services on a regular basis. And this is where we think we can inject some youthful energy and talent into the profession. As for it being the food, it is there. And now that there are some few companies that are processing the cassava into high quality cassava flour and then bioethanol, I mean, the sky is the limit for cassava. So the opportunities are many, but what I'm coming from the plantation development where we remove all the bottlenecks that are militating against the present day smallholder farmer. The model we are proposing is not to kick out the smallholder farmer because, I mean, we are past the stage of one person amalgamating so many smallholder farmers and kicking them out. We want now to free the smallholder farmer from the stress-laden, drudgery-laden activity he or she does, and then let him or her have another that free time to do other productive activities. Yes. And then we offload this burdensome activity to the cattle owner who has a facility and the machinery to do it best.
Yes.
And these are the models we are talking. So government, I mean, if they inject just a little bit of money into the research to remove all these bottlenecks, within a short time, the rewards will be there for everybody to see. Yes. Like when you see my harvester harvesting, you'll be amazed. But what it can harvest in a minute, no local food processor can process it.
Yes.
So that must actually find its way to the industry. And we need more industry to spring up so that they can add value and then they can employ more. And then, I mean, they'll put more money in the pocket of the youth.
The young one. Cassava flour, is that processed into a bread or a pao, or how is that used?
In fact, the cassava flour has so many uses. It can be part of the pastries. It can be used in any food that we eat, even in the sauces, the soups that we drink at tables or even in hotels. It can be used for everything. Bread. If now we are talking of mixing cassava flour in a certain proportion with wheat flour, and this the type of bread that it makes is also very good. But we need government policy to push this thing.
Yeah.
Because over so many centuries, people are used to bread from wheat. So to now shift to this thing, government must come and prove that this is actually a very healthy food, I mean, for people to use. Then other pastries, and then even now, the noodles we have, you can use cassava starch and flour for that.
Yes. Instead of importing it.
Yes, the spaghetti. And so many other things. So I mean, the only thing is that it has never been part of the mainstream processed product in the past.
Yes.
But whether it was deliberate or it was, an oversight, we can now confront the issue head on and say that it is good. Let us use it. But that too, sometimes I've been saying that I think we need our colleagues in the medical research arena to also prove some of the health benefits of some cassava products. And some of them are doing it now. So if those research are done with empirical evidence, I think it will clear the doubts among the too many consumers about the benefits of this very important crop.
Can you describe gari, baku, and fufu to me? Because I have no idea what that is.
Okay, let me start with gari first and then fufu second. Gari is actually one product of cassava that can have a very long shelf life. When it is done the way we call it gari, it is gelatinized. The starch in the cassava is roasted in such a way that it becomes crispy. Now, the traditional way of doing it is that you first of all have to harvest the cassava, peel it, remove the peels, and then crush the flesh, which actually has a lot of water. About 60% of the weight of cassava is water. Then after that, you squeeze out this water from the mash. And then the dry mash, not fully dried, I mean, having about some 30% moisture, this mash is actually sieved, and then it is put on a pan on fire. And then it is stirred continuously for some time until the starch gelatinizes so that it becomes small grits, which it says that they have very low moisture, and then they can actually be stored for a very long time.
Yeah.
You can use it, you can grind it into flour and use it for other things. You can eat it directly by adding water and then sugar and milk and then eating it. And then so many products. In fact, there are so many products that you can make out of gari. We have gari foto in Ghana. Then you can use some even to make other crops like yakayaka and then the rest. But in Ivory Coast, they have a form of the gari, but they don't actually roast it to that low moisture content. And then they use it as acheke. But that is a different thing. But the gari is, roasted on fire in a pan to a very low moisture content. And then it is able to last for a very long shelf life. Then the fufu is this. Fufu is actually something that is made from fresh cassava that is uprooted the same that day or the day before. It is peeled, by hand with a knife, and then boiled. And then to some soft texture. And then this boiled tuber or root is now pounded. Traditionally we use mortar and pestle, but now we have got some mechanized way of making it so that it becomes some sort of, smooth, it gets a smooth texture that can stretch a little bit. And then people add, in Ghana like this, we add unripe plantain to make that, mixture. And then it is not so starchy, so that you can use it and then use it to soup, and then you eat. It's a major food we call fufu.
Yeah.
And that is it. Then the other one, other products like banku, akple, and then the rest, they come out in different forms. But when you remove the moisture from the cassava, it can stay for a very long time. But the fufu one is made, the one we say fufu in Ghana is made from the fresh cassava. But the fufu in Nigeria, the process is different.
Yes.
But the one in Ghana is what we boil fresh cassava that is peeled until it is soft, and then we pound it in the mortar manually, or now we take it into a small fufu pounding machine that turns it into a very smooth texture for us that we use, and then we use to soup, and then we swallow. And that's a major meal in any Ghanaian homes.
It's interesting. Obviously, there are a lot of immigrants in New Zealand, and if you go into the supermarket, if there's a major group of immigrants, let's say from China, you'll find one or two sections in the supermarket where there's food specifically from that area, and you'll find outside markets for it. In the general supermarket, you'll buy yams because there's a big Asian immigrant population. But I'm thinking there's a South American shop close by, and I wonder if they don't sell mandioca, in powdered form. And I'm going to go have a look for that, because I do actually prefer it above potato. Emmanuel, what's the future look like? Like, what does your next year or 5 years look like for you?
That's great. A quick comment on the fufu powder.
Yes, please.
Now we have the powder to which, I mean, it's made and then it's packaged very well, so you can use it with hot water and get the fufu with the same, I mean, consistency that we get from the fresh cassava. That is also available now. And
okay,
that is the one for export. Now coming to your main question, the substantive question, my future is that I think we need all hands on deck to make cassava, I mean, shift from its old age position as an orphan crop to a frontline, I mean, incentive-laden, multi-million crop. So that it can actually attract the best brains among our youth population to venture into this business and then take it to the highest level as a food security crop and then also as an industrial crop. But we need government support, government and then donor support and development partners to shift the paradigm and then throw in some more resources to support the upliftment of this crop from its present obscurity to a level where we can all be proud that it is actually making a major impact on our economies, employment, and then revenue generations in our part of the world.
You mentioned, sorry, now I've got to just thought of another question. You mentioned in Brazil, you know, it will be kind of like mandioc would be like almost a euro in a, for example, a restaurant or a hotel. Are there young people, kind of, you know, funky, hip young people, not like you and me, doing that kind of thing in restaurants in Ghana, where cassava is part of in a cool restaurant in a hip area of town? Is it being served in that way for the kind of up and coming business people or not?
Yes, I think luckily there is an increasing interest in the use of cassava products.
Yeah.
One, especially when they use the flour to make the meals that we are used to, close to banku and fufu. They claim that it digests faster than the other products. And I think with that, even though there's no empirical evidence to support that, it's anecdotal. And then I think there's a growing interest in eating cassava products now. Unlike the previous, during the time we were young, cassava has been demonized in such a way that if you are eating cassava product, it's like you are the poorest of the poor. But
now,
the businessmen and then those from the affluent sector of the population are also patronizing it. And I think that's a good news.
Yes.
Because, I mean, the question as in Brazil like this, I've visited Brazil on two occasions before, and in between about 20 years difference. And then I saw cassava product in five-star hotel.
Mm.
I mean, being served. In fact, I went to one place in close to Sao Paulo, and I went to a restaurant, an open restaurant, and I bought cassava chips. They were more expensive than the potato chips.
Interesting.
And I have a big jug beer with it, and then it was fun. So we need to bring cassava to a level, the same level, like potato chips and then the rest in our part of the world.
Yeah, that marketing aspect of it is actually a big part where it's being seen as cool. Because I know from South Africa where there was a big rift between the way farming was seen in white communities and the way farming was seen in black communities. In white communities, it was seen as something to make you rich. And then, I mean, that's a very quick summary of it. But in black communities, it was smallholder farming, and it was seen something that the poor did, and it wasn't appealing to the young. But I'm seeing a lot of young black farmers that I met in South Africa are now influencers on Instagram, and they're making farming cool again. And that marketing aspect also has influence on how it's perceived by government and the willingness to invest in it. And that's also maybe a part of the future.
I think so. I think we need, I mean, very smart marketeers to enter the terrain and then, I mean, try to lift the image of cassava so that it will compete favorably with the present influential crops like those made from the cereals and then the rest. I agree with you perfectly. But even in some countries, we want... But in my country, cassava is used to make two brands of lager beer.
Yeah.
And it has become very popular. So we need the major breweries to also use cassava to make some of their products, so that it will also serve as attractive value added product for most of the population.
But Emmanuel, thanks. I really enjoy that. It's always good to meet again with someone who inspired me in the past. I couldn't find that Farmers Weekly article that I wrote previously. I was actually looking for it. It's somewhere there in the dark internet. I can find it somewhere with good Googling. Thank you very much for that, and hopefully we'll speak again in a couple of years' time, and the picture will have changed.
Thank you very much, Gerhard. I hope so, that maybe very soon we'll talk again, and then we'll see how cassava is making waves in our countries and then all over the world, so that, I mean, its present position will be something that even the rich men will be running to invest their monies, and then we change the paradigm for good in our lifetime.
Yeah, I hope so.